The theme for the afternoon talk is acceptance and rejection. A couple of each evening, in fact, although we actually had the privilege of a night off last night. Long may they continue. Forgive me, each evening, teachers and the staff, managers and cooks get together around 9:30, and we have some time for some sharing and discussion, and to see if anything is boiling up, not necessarily on the kitchen stove. And one of the areas that we touched upon 2 evenings ago was the area of acceptance, and then acceptance and rejection. And these kind of Dharma discussions and explorations I really enjoy. There's a dynamic that takes place. It's an opportunity to express our views and our concerns and our understanding. And it had a, despite the hour of the day, I think we finished just after 11. There was a good vitality for some looking into these matters. And when I left and walked over to my room there, I how sometimes in the past the memory comes, and some of those incidences of life from the past emerge of something of similar. And what I have in mind here, when I was a monk, and every few years I would go to see my old teacher to pay respect to him in southern Thailand. And sometime, I think it was probably the early 1990s, on one of these visits there, I'd stay 2 or 3 days, and then he suddenly decided, as he would quite often do, oh, we're going somewhere. And then I was a monk, we'd go on a yatra. So everybody, or he'd pick the monks and the nuns, and we'd go on walking. It always took place just as one's sitting meditation is finally settling down. He was in, and we're going. Oh. So in this, and of course, at this time, he would probably be probably in his late 70s, I would have thought, at this time. And he said, tomorrow we're going to the branch monastery. So it was 5 o'clock in the morning. It was a 17-hour drive. So the abbot, the teacher, sat in the front seat with the driver, and a couple of nuns, a couple of monks, and myself in this kind of trailer thing at the back. They're not seats, just trailer. Little floor where you put junk. So we sat in that for 17 hours while he just came to look through the window. Sabai means okay, sort of. So we got there at 9 o'clock at night there, and then he called about 15 or 20 monks and nuns to his hut, and he said, I want us to have a discussion. Oh no. And the discussion was on a word, and the word was patana. So one has this satipatthana. Sati is mindfulness. Patana, like those who've been to Dharamsala, Patankot means station. It means the application of the attention to something for a period. You get on that station. You get on that station of the body, and you look at that, you get on the feelings, on the states of mind. So he said, why would the Buddha use a word like station? This is the. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I said, enough for me. Shalom, I'm off the bed there. So they carried on, the monks and the nuns, and some others drifted off. And then around 7 o'clock in the morning, the gong went for the breakfast signal, and I walked past his hut, and the monks and nuns had gone, and there were literally more than 70 pairs of shoes outside the hut. And he was having some discussion about some other Dharma topic with lay people who had just come, you know, and talk about, we were speaking last night a little bit about passion and energy. The 17-hour car journey, works all through the night talking about the Dharma, doesn't go to bed. All these lay people arrive in a bus, and he's there having another Dharma discussion, etc. It's inspiring. Got nothing to do with the talk, but I just wanted to relate something to it. In the exploration of the Dharma here, in terms of acceptance and rejection, and sometimes when you and I take some notice of our life there, and the responses which we have to a situation or situations. And sometimes the responses to both really can seem quite appropriate. So if we take the first one, and the one of acceptance, so at times situations may change in our life, and we will say to ourselves and to each other, well, I really just have to accept this. You know, it might be the partner has left, we've lost the job there. We had something really valuable and we've misplaced it and we can't find it, whatever it may be. It may be the acceptance of health issues, and sometimes sickness can arise and we just have to accept that. It might be in the short period, it might be in the long period. And all of that attitude and of mind towards acceptance becomes important for us. And sometimes as well in the areas of rejection that takes place. Sometimes people are very angry and abusive towards us, and we don't want to stand for that, and we reject that. We sometimes look at the policies of our government and the corporate sector, and we see the harm and the suffering which is taking place as a result of political or corporate decisions, and we reject that. There are times as well when events arise in our life, and we say, I don't want this to continue any longer, and there's a rejection of that. So there is a place for us and the capacity in our life to look at areas of acceptance and the areas of rejection there. But both have a vulnerability to them. And this is what I want to touch upon with you. So while recognizing in specific situations the value of acceptance and the value of rejection there, but the vulnerability, the Achilles heel, I don't know if it's used, but yeah, I mean only, eh? The story, you know, it's just across the med, isn't it? So I'm sure you all know of Achilles, whose mother dropped him in the well of immortality. And if he was soaked in this well of immortality, he would never die. But she forgot that she was holding his heel. And then in the battle, the arrow was fired and it landed, of course it would, in his heel, and he died there. So the Achilles heel, and in my world, it's an extremely big heel, it can cover much of the body, is around acceptance there. And what I mean by that is that sometimes the attitude of mind which arises towards a situation or an object, that the movement of the inner life accepts what is happening, or sometimes struggles, but trying to accept what is happening. But the acceptance, not necessarily, but can be a blind spot to the inquiry of what is happening. And the consequence of that for some people is that the acceptance in fact then becomes a rather passive response. I have to accept this. And this passive response may take out the reaction or the rejection. It may help us inwardly to feel more at ease, I accept this, what is happening, or whatever. But without some inquiry and observation, the passivity, if it's used regularly, will begin to spread in the mind to lots of areas where it does not need to go. And I used in our group the other evening the example of Buddhist countries, which have some of the worst human rights records that Amnesty has listed because of a very passive, accepting response to what has and continues to take place in some of these Buddhist countries. The corruption, the violence, the wars, etc. So if we take acceptance out of the specific there, it easily then becomes a response, and a widespread response, and one becomes more and more passive. And for some people, this passive response of acceptance could be hiding fear. The fear to act, the fear to speak up, the fear to question. So sometimes things are going on in our life around us, in the office and at home and in various situations in our life or inside of ourselves. And instead of questioning and inquiring and applying our authority, we bring in this contemporary ideology of acceptance. And if that opinion or that attitude gets very, very strong, then those who are controlling types, domineering types, will bring the accepting type into a more passive condition. And it's unhealthy. It is unhealthy. Extremely unhealthy. And there's rather a lot of it around, I have to say. Rather a lot of it around. I use the small example in the monasteries where there is a lot of passivity and unquestioningness, whereby sometimes the monks have had the view, and I know it because I lived in the monasteries, of, well, everything is changing. This is just the current regime, called Thailand, called Burma, called Tibet, the Chinese, or Sri Lanka, and it will pass. It's just what goes on. It will pass. This language gets used there. And sometimes, when people go from that, as the monks in Burma did with the Saffron Revolution, and then they told government and the military and the generals and the army and the soldiers that what their actions in Burma were so bad that no amount of merit could compensate for it. So the monks said, as a direct action, as a statement of non-acceptance, they said, if you come to us, we are turning the begging bowl upside down, so you can't put food in our begging bowl, so you can't make merit. It's hard sometimes in a non-Buddhist country to communicate the power of such a statement. This was in 2008. And for the monks to do that, because some of them were being tortured and arrested and disrobed and sent off to the camps, etc. And when they had the demonstrations on the street, one of the abbots was walking in the front with the bowl upside down. It was an incredibly symbolic protest about injustice from the government. And that frightened the government, because they kept putting out the propaganda, we are protecting the monks, we are protecting the ordained Sangha. So acceptance carries, to express the it again for us, easily a passive element to it. And it is important from the standpoint of exploration and inquiry, are we really recognizing when it is appropriate, when acceptance is useful and valid? Is it a mask and covering up? And is there, following up from the acceptance, still an interest to look into the causes and conditions? I accept whatever, I accept I lost this, this happened to me, but I want to know what are the causes and conditions, as the Buddha said, what led up to this? To a loss, to a separation, to my grief and despair, to my depression, to my passivity, to my inability to respond. What are the conditions that led up to it? And that looking gives us some opportunity for the inquiry then to have some quiet reflection. What is the things that I didn't notice? And if we just accept, we may not do any of that. We've just accepted. If the acceptance leads to the inquiry, wonderful. If it doesn't, it may be a blind spot to insight and realization. Similarly, with regard to rejection, sometimes even when I say the word, I don't know about you, but rejection. We're supposed to be all-embracing. I'm not quite clued into that one, but anyway. So sometimes in rejection that takes place, the lovely statements here with regard to the teachings and the exploration. When something is happening there, which you and I look at, there may well be some rejection of it. And sometimes it's a very important response. Initially, the rejection may be greed, hate, fear, delusion. We don't want to live as prisoners to all of this. And some rejection of it, I would say, has a validity to it. That rejection of it does not have to mean the suppression of it. It means that it's not tolerable. One rejects it. And as the Buddha commented sometimes, in that kind of viewpoint, sometimes one has to grit one's teeth and just stand the ground, which I'll speak to you about in a few moments. So, again, when we look at something in life, and there is some rejection, when is it healthy and when is it unhealthy? Somebody is giving you a hard time. Could be mummy and daddy. It could be your boss or whatever. And it could be the partner or what person or persons in your life. Sometimes giving us a hard time, maybe voices from the past, recent past, childhood past. So the voices from outer or inner come and arise there. And the inner response to the voices from the past or the present may well be, I don't want these voices. I don't need to hear this. I don't need to experience this. Why is this voice giving me such a hard time? There is, in that time, some rejection of the voice. One is not saying to the voice, which is where we're putting ourselves down and finding fault, wonderful! Freedom of mind includes putting myself down. Oh, have more of this voice. Nobody wants this negative, judgmental, hard voice, which is one of the primary causes of all human conflict. All human conflict has in it the negative and the blame and the fault finding, which intensified is war and violence. It can only start with a voice which is negative. And so sometimes you see, gosh, people say to me, oh, Christo, I'm so negative. I'm negative about myself, I'm negative about the government, I'm negative about the Palestinians, I'm negative about my neighbours, you know, it just runs everywhere. The catching of the voice there, in the seeing of it, in the moment, because one doesn't want to be a negative human being, it's a rejection of the voice. The difficulty is, if it's a reaction, the Buddha spoke about this, if it's a reaction to it, one is in this strange position of an angry voice inside of oneself, let's say blaming oneself, and then there is an angry voice inside coming up, which is attacking oneself for attacking oneself. So there is a projection going on, I am at fault, I am wrong, I'm always making mistakes. One rejects it, but there's a reaction in the rejection. And then the reaction in the rejection, it then breeds another. I am, and then one's, God, I'm always attacking myself. Now I'm attacking myself for attacking myself. And it goes on, it's the mirror image, isn't it? I think we call it a nightmare. So the point of rejection of doesn't have to have a reaction to. It's not acceptable to keep blaming ourselves, to keep finding fault, to carrying around a lot of guilt, to feeling worthless. It's robbing us of our worth as a human being, of our dignity as a human being. Sometimes, both here and elsewhere, common voice, and it is one of things have been painful in the past, sometimes extremely painful, and that painfulness could be to oneself. It could be generational. It could be generations. And as in early September of this year, if I may say, I paid a visit to Auschwitz, and I spent the whole of the day there. I found it a extremely difficult day. I went with a guide, and there was a small group of us and a beloved Dharma friend, Dominika, who's Polish, who told me that she only lived 40 minutes from Auschwitz, had never been there in her life, place of such obscenity and infamy. And so we spent the day together, and the guide, after 20 years, still had that passion, I would say, to making as clear as possible what took place there in detail to the point that time to time during the day, I would walk away from the small group talking together, honestly, and just breathe at this information that was coming and kind of get recentered again because of the impact it was having on my feeling life, and then walk back and then listen again and just carry on. And I think he recognized I needed these minutes of break there. And sometimes we look at all of that, and of course your knowledge is many times more intimate than mine could ever be. And it's terribly easy that out of that, and understandable, that, and other situations, you know, from childhood abuse, you know, to domestic violence, to alcohol and drug addiction, and other situations, don't have a real parallel, but a little bit, insofar as that the identity, which can land, oh, and the word gets used internationally, I am a survivor. I survived all of this. And it's not to say that there is no relationship of our past to our present, and the very painful past to our present. But if that identity gets established, it gets kind of strong, with a strong conviction, in a way, we're still prisoners. In a way, we're still struggling. And in a way, we're not paying the deepest respect to ourselves to be able to emerge out of the painful past, whether it's called childhood or whether it's called a generation, to be able to see and fully acknowledge pain of the past, to be quite clear about it, so there is no denial in that respect, yet emerge into our fullness in the present. And Dharma teachings are very much concerned about that. We reject, of course, fully and totally the horrors of the Nazi regime and everything that took place. That requires real, clear, unambiguous, self-evident rejection. Of course it does. But we want to see, am I as a human being, have I emerged out of the shadows in which there is no denial of history, and it's a tragedy that people will deny history, but there's no denial of history, but I'm not bound to the identity. I'm compassionate, I'm concerned, I am reflective, I am looking at circumstances, but I'm not a prisoner. And that's an inner empowerment with clear acknowledgement. And I am not accepting what happened in the past. Never. I'm concerned about it. I'm concerned about any aspects of that being carried in any subtle or gross way. So our looking at the dynamic as a human being into the areas of acceptance and rejection are important, and to repeat myself, I think it requires from us quite some skill and precision about where acceptance is appropriate and useful, where rejection of is appropriate and useful, and where it's stopping or hindering us from a freedom, a great freedom in life, to question and explore. Sometimes, there's no water lying around, it's slightly going to be a little dry, heat, summer is coming. The aspect of acceptance of the passive element is very important to look at, and with regard to the meditator. And one feature, and sometimes we hardly notice this is happening for us, there is sometimes a kind of blind faith. Yeah, blind is about the word for it. Blind faith there, that if I just observe, if I am just mindful, it will all come right. That my practice is just paying attention to, and if I really just look at things, and I say, well, everything is changing, or it's not self, it's not me, it's just coming and going, or whatever, all of which is genuinely an important and valuable practice. I mean, I have to say that, I'm a Dharma teacher, but anyway, it's an important and valuable practice. But the mindfulness or the meditation upon the looking at itself can carry the passive element. As if just by looking at, somehow choices, fears, indecisions, the kaleidoscope of stories and thoughts and ideas, but somehow I'll just get into the flow if I just look at. It's an exaggerated importance which is given to the mindfulness. It almost becomes, this is the means, the only means for waking up, for liberation. The consequence of too much reliance upon mindfulness to see what is happening is, tendency will be towards a more passive condition. There. And that means something else has to be happening, in which the Buddha speaks of a lot. He took, in India, and elsewhere as well, the word in India is used, and some of you will have heard the word siddhis, and it means powers, so, you know, psychic powers, from the walking on water, etc. It's always seemed to me a daft idea. I much prefer swimming, but anyway, and the idea of producing something out of nothing. And flying through the air. Well, we've overcome that. We've got aeroplanes, and these are siddhis there. And I'm one of those. I just, frankly, I think all these so-called miracles is total nonsense. It's at the very best, they're metaphors. Walking on water is not drowning in the emotions. And walking not being overwhelmed by the elements, you know, things like that. Passing through the walls, which is another one, is that human beings have the one that sometimes we have these walls and all these boundaries around us, and we work on that, and we can pass through any wall and the boundaries there. But when it comes to the idea of producing something out of nothing, I think, completely out to lunch. And I always remember that the fellow who did all the miracles in South India. What was his name? Who?
With the coins.
Yeah, and Saya Baba. Saya Baba. Yeah. Saya Baba or Sorry Baba? Or Saya. Saya Baba. And the devotees will send me to hell for saying that. And I remember it was his birthday. I was in India. Got very little to do with the talk, just an aside. He was in India. I was in India. And one of his devotees said that Saya Baba is producing what's the ash? Vibhuti. The sacred ash out of nothing. And he like that. Come on. And he said, he's so powerful, he can perform such miracles that devotees put his photograph on their wall in their kitchen or in their toilet or somewhere. And the sacred ash is coming out of his eyes. Come on. So I said, look, here's my email address. I don't care where you live. This person actually lived in Canada. Where you live. If that is happening, send me an email in your house and I will be there on the next flight. Because my whole life is based on the understanding of dependent arising. Causes and conditions bring something about. If the causes and conditions are there, it can't come about. Something cannot come from nothing. I have not seen a scrap of evidence for this belief anywhere in my entire life, and I've moved in these spiritual religious circles there. But here it is. Please contact me. Straight away. I'll be there, I promise. That was about 10, 12 years ago. I'm still waiting. I'm not quite sure what's got to do with the topic, but anyway, so there in the line. So sometimes the more mindfulness can, doesn't have to carry a rather passive aspect to it. The Buddha speaks of the siddhis, he does this, Pali word is iddhi, which is the power of mind. And what I mean by that is, rather than in some cases, just observing and kind of trusting, if I just look at things, if I'm just patient, if I'm just with the situation, it will be okay, it will work out all right. Sometimes, in some situations, we need to develop, this is the middle way here, between rejection and acceptance, we need to develop or have an attitude. Sometimes we say, enough is enough. No more. It's enough. And that can be towards anything. Anything. It can be towards an unwelcome habit. It can be towards continuing sorrow and hurt and disappointment and self-blame. It could be towards being an angry person. It can be towards compulsive shopping, shouting at the children, sleeping 12 hours a day or whatever. That sometimes the voice of authority, which is the middle way, which is authentic, needs to come in and say enough. And that middle way is not a reaction in terms of a negative blaming rejection, nor is it just an acceptance of. And it's that vast middle ground for us that sometimes we have to look at a situation and say, no more. We have to look at a situation and say, yes, this has to start. And that power, that's the city, the great one, in fact, it's that power of the human being to bring in their authority as a human being, which perhaps finally takes real responsibility for our situation. And sometimes in the Dharma world, which I, you know, move in the circles, only 24/7, sometimes in the Dharma circles, that voice sometimes is quiet. I'm not hearing enough of the voice which says, no, no more. I'm not hearing enough the voice which says, yes, this has to change and this will change. And there's too much of this rather passive reliance, either upon mindfulness or just sitting in meditation or just discussing a problem together or whatever. And it needs something more than that in some situations. There. And that movement of empowerment is the capacity to take full responsibility for what one is experiencing now. And when we can't, we'll find blame. So even if some terrible things happen to us personally in the past, which they do, a lot of unkindness and abuse and cruelty and horrible things happen to people there, and I'm sure I certainly have listened to thousands of incredibly painful stories, and then they touch deep when one listens to them. And though those events have happened in the past, and they've been very, very hurtful to heart, mind, and body, the whole there, still, nevertheless, in spite of the truth of it, and the fact, and the reality of it, today is today. And somewhere, we have to find today the capacity to take full responsibility for what we're feeling, for what we are experiencing, because we're adults. That doesn't let anybody else off the hook. It doesn't mean to say that others are not accountable and responsible for what they did. That's still included in that. But if I, as a human being, keep saying, she, he, or they made me like I am, then I'm not able to take the full responsibility for what I'm feeling, for what I'm going through. And once that shift is made, recognizing causes and conditions from the past, no denial, I'm not putting it into denial, recognizing that at this time, on this day, in this period of my life, I'm going to take full responsibility for what is happening, how I'm feeling, and how I'm experiencing. And once I take that responsibility, it is liberating. And the Dharma is about a liberation from history. Any history. It's a liberation movement. And that middle way expresses it for each and every one of us. And it isn't easy. And I take the same principle with regard to ourself. We can keep looking at the negative judgmental mind inside of ourselves. And sometimes with the privilege of the role, and the opportunity to listen to people. And some people will come, both here and everywhere else, and I'm sure therapists know this amongst you as well as I. And we'll listen to the story there. And sometimes we're also tired of listening to the story, as you mentioned yesterday evening. And one can even feel a little bit more tired because one is talking to the person and she or he is relating the story, and we're there. And it happens quite regularly, and the little flash of light comes up inside. This is more or less the same story I heard from you last year, etc. And the person said, well, it's still going on. And why is it still? But I'm meditating on it. Oh, marvellous. Great. You'd be meditating on it for the next 10 lifetimes if you just meditate on it. So somewhere, sometimes in the story there, it needs that conviction or some passion. And the Buddha uses this nice word, aditana. And adi means high. And tana, satipatthana, station, application, a higher application. So sometimes something is going on for us. And sometimes the power, which is a power of mindfulness, but everybody speaks of it as an iddhi, as a power, is enough. But sometimes we know, gosh, I've been looking at the same old story or the same old mind state or the same old habit or the same old feeling of being stuck there. And then when that happens, that's when the determination comes in. It's a kind of, literally, moving to a higher station. It means, therefore, the question, therefore, what is going to change this? Is it coming down to a yes or a no? Does it need some vitality from the deep to change? And that, when that happens for us, whatever it might be about, when that happens for us, there, it does communicate. It is a liberating movement, and that's the precious thing about it. And it's quite extraordinary the number of occasions and times that women and men have looked at situations, let's say, have brought something to an end, have been willing to go from the known into the unknown there, through that. Or, for some, the willingness to say yes and to take the risk there may be a movement from the unknown, that clear abiding with the unknown. And there is the known, and previously one has been a bit afraid of going into that which you know is there, available. There's been some holding back which is going on. One wants to live a full and rich and life with an adventure, the passion to go with it. And sometimes from that we have said to ourselves, yes, and moved into some unfamiliar territory which we know about, and sometimes we know we just need to do it. Our reasoning at times may not be able to explain. We can't explain it sometimes to our loved ones. We can't explain it to ourselves. And there are things in life which move us there, and we just have no rational reasons for it, because it's working from somewhere else in the being. And sometimes we can spend years thinking about, shall I or shan't I? Should I or shouldn't I? And all of that is to support a passive relationship. The thinking gets used because it can be pleasant and curious and interesting. The thinking gets used for a long time as a means to stop the action. And it's one of the, it cripples life. Too much thinking about something. It's a terror. Too much thinking about something. It will keep us passive. We need thought. I'm not one of those who reject thought or we've got to get out of our mind or whatever. No, thought's useful. Reflection is very useful and beneficial. In order to feel our worth as a human being and our dignity and our passion and our freedom. And that middle way of the Buddha is the dialogue with life towards that. So if we venture to acceptance, of what? For how long? If we venture to rejection, of what? For how long? Is my mindfulness got power to it? Or do I tend to be rather passive, rather accepting? And therefore, are there areas of my life which need the iddhi, that means the power, the yes and the no? And if we keep that, and therefore we say to ourselves, no matter what happens with this life, there will be the taking of the full responsibility to give it the attention and the inquiry and the understanding that it deserves. And this is, I would say, an expression of a mature and a wise human being. We have the capacity to be responsible. May all beings live with awareness. May all beings explore authority. May all beings love the free movement of life. Let's have a quiet minute.